Welcome in all those watching us on YouTube and on Sacktown Sports 1140 Twitter page. My name is Chris Watkins. Joining me digitally, as always, Frankie Cardicelli. Frank, we have survived the storm, the great storm of 2023. I don't know if we're going to be able to survive this Cardiac Kings, though. Four of their last five games have come down to one score, the only one not being a 10-point loss in Memphis on Monday. Sunday?
That was Sunday, New Year's Day.
Sunday, New Year's Day, right, which was the beginning of this storm. And the Kings followed up Tuesday with an absolute thriller in Utah. Goes down to the final shot, goes down to a review of that final shot. And then last night, on the second night of a back-to-back, coming back to SAC, Bogey was back. It was good to see. What was not good to see was the Kings falling on the wrong side of the result, 120-117, losing to Atlanta last night. What a fun little, I mean, I guess, you know, the Memphis game wasn't fun, but how have you felt watching these just games come down to the wire these past couple days?
I mean, I'm thinking about the last time we recorded, and the Utah game hadn't even happened yet, right, with the Kevin Huerter shot. So, really fun times. I mean, that was the loudest I've ever heard it at Golden One Center on Friday. That was really fun to see and hear. Some fun games. I mean, if you look at the three of the last four, Utah, and Atlanta, some fun and some bad. I mean, you're more good than bad, right? In two of those three, you win them. The Memphis game, obviously the outlier, where the Kings are clearly outmatched by a good Memphis team. But this team is competing on a nightly basis. Even the Memphis game, they had a chance to make a run. They were never really completely out of it. But when you look at games like last night, they kind of leave a bad taste in your mouth. And obviously Tuesday's game in Utah was so fun and exciting. And it always is such a bummer to me when the Kings have these back-to-backs and a really fun game and a strong performance from De'Aaron Fox in the fourth quarter gets kind of overshadowed by a loss. And now the Kings have two off days before they can try to wash that taste out. But it's encouraging to me that they're in every game.
Right.
Obviously, you'd like to win games like last night, but to be fair, the Kings were never in control last night, and that's not really something I'm saying to make anyone feel better, but it wasn't a game that they deserved to win. They needed to play better from the beginning. The defense was atrocious. As we know, the defense has been up and down this season. It's going through another bad spell. Their last three games, they've allowed 118, 115, 120. Actually, four games, 120. Actually, I'm sorry. It's a way longer stretch of games that are bad. They have not allowed under 115 points since
the Denver game excluded.
I don't think
one
actually,
of
I
the Denver games they allowed.
I can't see a game on here. I'm actually trying to look back and like further back. And the point is, the defense has been bad. We're going to talk about what kind of stuck out against Atlanta and everything, but right now, I'm just looking at the schedule, and there's more green as in wins than red as in losses. So 20-17, they are in sole possession of first place in the Pacific, which is kind of crazy based on percentage points. But Kings fans should be greedy. I mean, they've had some games coming up that they should win. And last night was a perfect example of a game the Kings could have won. Even though they weren't supposed to win, they had a chance.
Yep. And we'll talk about that Kings good stretch of games coming up probably towards the end of this episode. We'll also get into recaps of what we thought of last night's game and Tuesday's game in Utah. But first, I want to talk about something I mentioned at the top of this episode, being that the All-Star voting, fan voting, has just been released right before we went live today at 10 o'clock. Let me see if I can share this with our viewers so that people can get the same kind of thing. Look at the same thing I'm looking at here. So we have all our voting, fan voting, which has been released. And the big surprise for all Sacramento Kings fans here, if you look at this list, there are some names that are missing. And the glaring ones for Sacramento Kings fans are no Domantas Sabonis and no De'Aaron Fox even listed on the top 10 positional fan votes. Just to read through for the Western Conference, the front court players, which again does not include Domantas Sabonis, is LeBron James leading all vote getters, Eastern and Western Conference, with 3.1 million votes. Jokic second, Anthony Davis third, Zion fourth, Andrew Wiggins fifth, Paul George sixth, Lauri Markkanen seventh, Draymond Green eighth, Kawhi Leonard ninth, and Kevon Looney 10th with 245,000 votes. So Domantas Sabonis does not crack that list, not even getting 245,000 votes. You know, that's let me get this overlay out of the way for the stream viewers. And then go through the guards as well. Again, De'Aaron Fox not included on this list, and this is even more tragic. Steph Curry leads guard votes. Steph Curry, mind you, hasn't played in about a month or so. Leading guards with 2.7 million votes. Luka Doncic in second. Ja Morant in third. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in fourth. Klay Thompson fifth. Russell Westbrook sixth. Damian Lillard seventh. Devin Booker eighth. Austin Reeves ninth with 144,000 votes, and Jordan Poole 10th with 138,000 votes.
Disgusting.
Fox not cracking that list, not even getting 138,000 votes. Frank, I don't even know what to say about this. Obviously, you know, the fan vote is not the end all be all. I believe the fan vote is only for the starters. It's for the list of starters that can be selected by the captain. So fan vote, again, not the end all be all. And you can still make the all-star team, I believe, off coaching votes. And I'm not sure if it's media votes or not, but I do know that there's a secondary criteria that that allows you to be selected to the all-star game as well. But just kind of what are your initial thoughts seeing this list and the lack of inclusion of any Sacramento Kings even being named on the top 10?
I'm very confused because I've never seen so much activity as far as the Kings voting process goes, the fan vote. And when you look at the fact that there are days where you can vote three times. It counts for three.
Yep.
De'Aaron Fox doesn't have 130,000 votes combined. Like, I just don't understand. Like, Jordan Poole has 138,000. Austin Reeves 144. De'Aaron Fox didn't get more than that. I don't think De'Aaron Fox doesn't have 200,000 votes. I mean,
that's a strange thing.
I just don't really fully understand it. I know that Golden State and Los Angeles, those are big markets. And I get that. That makes sense for why Westbrook's top six right now, even though he's been bad for most of the year. He's been playing well lately. But has he been a top six guard in the Western Conference? Absolutely not. And of course, this isn't indicative of that. The fan voting process of the All-Star game is not indicative of how you've been playing. I get that.
Right.
But it's market-based. And even for players, I mean, I'm looking right now at, I hate to break him, Tyrese Haliburton. Tyrese Haliburton should not be eighth in the guard voting in the East. And he's in Indiana, so yeah, he's below players like Trae Young, who have been bad this year. He's below James Harden. I mean, I know James Harden is James Harden, the name, but he's missed time and he hasn't really been the James Harden that has been an MVP over the past couple. If he can, the past couple years.
LaMelo Ball, he's behind.
LaMelo Ball's barely played this year. I mean, it just really is confusing to me. I mean, there are some names on this list that are very deserving to be up here on this fan vote process, but I'm happy this isn't the end all be all. It's not the end all be all, and they don't go completely off fan voting because, I mean, the name that Austin Reeves being top 10 is just, I really can't.
You know, I almost kind of expect that because that's like a troll vote. It's you throw in the Los Angeles factor of it all, you throw in the Austin Reeves meme factor of it all. That one makes a little bit of sense to me. But I kind of get, you know, I kind of expected them not to be high up on the list, but I definitely expected both to be featured in the list. And the fact to me that Lauri Markkanen is seventh for the front court players, Utah's a small market as well, probably slightly bigger than Sacramento, but not much. And you know, Lauri is the most front facing player of that Jazz team. That has been a big surprise, but I think the Kings have gotten just as much, if not more, national media attention than the Utah Jazz have, and Sabonis not being recognized at all in that front court list is absolutely absurd. And then for the guards, you see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's in OKC. Yes, Shai is playing incredibly. He's averaging over 30 points a game. But for Shea to get that level of recognition, and then again for De'Aaron Fox, who's in a similar level of market, for him to not even get mentioned, and we're talking a lower state, you know, the Kevon Looney, who's 10th for the front court players, has 245,000 votes. Not that much when you compare the fact that Andrew Wiggins in fifth place, who that's also kind of absurd, has 1.1 million votes. You know, that's a huge gap. But Jordan Poole has 138,000 votes, 100,000 less votes than Kevon Looney. And De'Aaron Fox still, like you mentioned, can't even crack that. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
apparently, I mean, we're not voting. Sacramento fans are not voting.
This means that fans have voted probably twice as much for Kevon Looney than they have for De'Aaron Fox. And again, right. it comes down to the market. I mean, the Bay Area must love Kevon Looney. And hey, Kevon Looney's had some good moments. And I just think that
he's never going to be an All-Star.
No,
let me tell you, he's never going to sniff an All-Star game.
Austin Reeves is not going to make the All-Star team. No, like it's not going to happen that way. Even Andrew Wiggins, who hasn't played much this year, he's top five, and he started last year. Yeah. So it's really the Golden State fans and Laker fans kind of flooding these voting boxes, whatever.
Stuff in the ballot.
Yeah, but here's the thing about the All-Star team, an All-Star game. The fact that a majority of the players that are selected are obviously reserves, and it comes from the coaches and the media. And I know that coaches for sure have taken note of what Domantas Sabonis is doing this year. De'Aaron Fox as well. And mostly Domantas Sabonis, though, who the man's leading the NBA in rebounds per game and rebounds right now. He's had 15 straight double doubles, leads the NBA in double doubles. He's going to be an All-Star. I mean, I'm not afraid of being freezing cold taked. Domantas Sabonis is going to be an All-Star. The question to me is, will De'Aaron Fox have enough on his resume to sneak in there in one of those last spots in the West, or can he be an injury replacement? But I think that Fox also, I told you last night, I'm kind of coming around to the side of, I think Fox maybe could more likely than not be an All-Star. When you look at the injuries that have taken place in the West and some players that might not play, what De'Aaron Fox has done in the fourth quarter over the past couple of weeks, which we're going to get into in a little bit, I think he's very deserving. It's just, are there enough spots? And the spots, as we can see here today, it's very political, it's very polarizing, and it's very bad. It's just bad. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else you can categorize this other than it is
an uphill battle.
Uphill battle. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think the guard position, I completely agree with you. I think Domantas Sabonis is an All-Star. I'm confident in saying that. His numbers speak for itself. His impact speaks for itself. And like you said, I think if we're talking coaches, especially, I think coaches are well aware of the level that Domantas Sabonis has played at this season. And I'm pretty confident that that he will be recognized as so, and will probably, you know, without much of a sweat, earn an All-Star bid this season. De'Aaron is kind of where I think the conversation kind of begins, just because I do think the top four vote getters for guards, I'm not going to say are locks, with I think Shea is the one that I'm a little bit iffy on, but I would say that they're as close to locks as you're going to get. I'm fairly confident Steph Curry is going to make the All-Star game. I don't know what we're doing if Luka Doncic doesn't make the All-Star game. Ja is probably going to make it. Like I said, Shea is more than likely going to make it. So that already puts you at four guards, you know, and then it's kind of like a Fox, Devin Booker, and that's probably the next two in the list. And then I'm trying to think of others, but I think, you know, at that point, I think there's five guard spots. So yeah, if there's an injury replacement, I think we were talking about that yesterday, that there's a good chance De'Aaron can make it as an injury replacement, which, guess what? All counts the same. Doesn't really matter. He'll take it. I think that there's a decent shot De'Aaron makes it when it's all said and done, but I wouldn't go as far as to say that it's a lock at the moment.
No, not a lock. Not a lock, but we still have a month to go. A month until the reserves are even announced. So a lot could happen by then. I don't know if the votes take place. I'd imagine the votes are being collected probably pretty soon if you have to get it from all 30 coaches. But look, De'Aaron is doing what he can to put himself in that conversation. That's enough to me. And the talent pool of the West is deep, and you can't control that. But the one thing that can be, I think it's pretty likely Domantas Sabonis is going to be an all-star, and I will say a lock. I will say today it's a lock, but man, just looking at the names on this list, it still is going to be tough for me to, just looking at the list, because I was saying to you off the air, oh yeah, I got a post ready. You know, we were talking to our boss, but getting an update ready for the all-star totals. You see the Kings putting out these commercials. The fact that they're not good even commercials, on the by list. The way. Yeah, hilarious. Hilarious. Pretty
good commercials. Like are they in the spirit of The Office, or is it in the spirit of the This Is ESPN commercials, or is that one and the same almost?
This is ESPN for sure. It's okay. It seems like it. At least one of them seems like the This Is SportsCenter
right. commercials, right. This is
which,
right.
which I've always been a fan of that model. I've always been a fan of that kind of, if the Kings were to do those, it'd be hilarious, and they should do more, in my opinion. Like you see the Giants, I think, have done commercials over the years. Yeah, the fact that all this effort, though, is put into this all-star campaign, and it's not, I mean, I don't want to say it's not fans' fault for voting, but I mean, I expect a little more than 130,000 votes for De'Aaron Fox, and I don't know. And Domantas Sabonis has, I mean, I'd assume he has a following overseas, but maybe not. I mean, maybe not as much, because obviously you see some players like Jokic and Luka. I mean, these are some of the big stars in the game, but I mean, it's just a little overwhelming to see, but
yeah, I wonder how much of it has to do with the fact that they changed the voting process this year. And it's not, you know, in the past it, you could tweet and vote, I think it would, you just had to have De'Aaron Fox's name and have #all star in the post, and it would count as a vote. And now you have to physically go to NBA.com, Kings.com, and like create an account and do all that process. So I wonder if that is kind of, I mean, it is just like a small step, but I do wonder how much of that is playing a role into the voting process, because obviously Kings fans are incredibly active on Twitter, but it's a whole different process when you're asking people to go that extra step to vote.
Yeah. No, I agree. It caught me off guard a little bit.
It definitely is.
I expected more.
I did too. But let's move. This is a nice smooth transition while we're talking about De'Aaron Fox and his all-star candidacy. He has absolutely turned it up since returning from that brief injury that he kept him out of two games. He returned on the road for that ugly Philly loss, and then really started to look himself in Toronto as the Kings got that win over the Raptors. What was that? That was like a month ago at this point. In his past 10 games since that Toronto game, averaging 27 points a game, just under 6.5 assists, shooting 52% from the field. And on you throw in on top of those just already surface level incredible numbers, he has been a different monster when it comes to the fourth quarter. A Tuesday night is absolutely the perfect case for that, dropping 22 points just in that fourth quarter on his way to 37 on the night, and hit the most important one, the game winner in Utah to seal that win for the Kings. Frank, bro, this guy, De'Aaron Fox, it's been not an up and down year, but definitely in the beginning of the year, we saw like that all-star, that incredible, his 3-point shot was falling. And then we saw him kind of crater a little bit, not crater, but kind of go down a little bit as he picked up that injury. Like I said, missed some games, and then it kind of took him one or two games just to kind of get back in the rhythm. But what are you seeing from De'Aaron Fox right now that just has you excited? Because this fool is just playing on a different level right now.
Oh, I mean, he looks like himself again. And the 3-point shot is the one kind of part of his game that has fallen off. But everything else still, it's there. I mean, over the past 11 games since coming back from the foot injury, after that Philly game, 27 points per game, a little under 7 assists, 4.1 rebounds, 51% from the field. And when you take into account what he's doing in the fourth quarter, and 7 of the past 9 games, Chris, 7 of the past 9 games, De'Aaron Fox has scored 11 or more points in the fourth quarter. In 2 of those games, he had 17 points or more. And that includes a 22-point game in Utah. But he just is getting, and he said it before, and when he said this quote, I kind of was like, oh, I don't know if you're, I think you might be biting off a little more than you can chew. When he said, I can get whatever shot that I want, he's not kidding. I mean, what he means by that is he can get into the paint and get to the rim whenever he wants with all these moves he makes. I mean, obviously he can have those step through Euro steps. He had this little step back kind of on a dime float back jumper that we were watching, and we said, "Whoa, like yeah, that! I can't believe he went full speed, just stopped on a dime, and kind of like a little slight fadeaway." But he can get wherever he wants inside the key, and he can finish. And when you see him playing at that kind of level and with the confidence that he has, it just shows how dangerous he can be, and he's doing that right now. He did it at the beginning of the year. The foot injury slowed him down. I think that was concerning a lot of people. He feels completely fine. Last night, he rolled his ankle, and he was like, "Oh, yeah, well, that's why I wear the braces. Like, I'm fine." It looked bad, but it wasn't bad. Just kind of like a scary thing that happens. But he's taking the precautions to keep himself healthy. Resting his foot seemed to really alleviate some of that pain. I mean, it kind of is crazy what just a day or two off your feet can do for the human body. But 27 points per game over the last month, essentially, is, again, that's what has propelled him back into that all-star conversation. He kind of faded away on that regard. Now it's back into, okay, well, if he keeps this up the next month, I don't know how you keep him out. So winning games is the most important. And, yeah, the Kings have won 3 of 5. That's most important. But having De'Aaron Fox play at a high level, while Domantas Sabonis is playing at a high level, and there are some other things that have not been going right, which is why the Kings have not been winning. You know, they're playing over 500 basketball, but why things haven't been really good for them, we'll get to that in a little bit. But De'Aaron Fox is playing at a high level, and that's most important.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you mentioned that Domantas Sabonis is playing incredible right next to him. To me, that's been the biggest key for the Kings, retaining the amount of success that they have. And it really has. I think in their last 20 games that they're now 21 games, they were 10 and 10 in their last 20, now being 10 and 11 in their last 21. So they really have just been keeping their head above water. And that's really all you have to do. That's that cushion of getting a couple games above 500 so that you can kind of still be average, but still be float. You know, at the end of the day, your record is still five game or whatever it is. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say five games above 500 because they haven't gotten there yet. But now they're still keeping their head above water over that 500.
Isn't that incredible?
It doesn't make incredible.
Last night, if anyone didn't know, was the seventh time the Kings have tried to pull five games above the 500 mark. They're 0-7 this year when they're trying to go five games over. They cannot get over that hurdle. I mean, if they can't get over it this week, Los Angeles, Orlando, Houston, San Antonio, LA. Okay. I mean, the next seven games, if you can't get five games over, I don't know when you're going to. So,
yeah. I mean, let's talk about these seven games because I've been waiting. I have been waiting for this seven-game stretch since the schedule came out. It was very clear that this was going to be the time for the Kings to really kind of make their stamp on the season. It's a seven-game stretch. I believe five of them are at home. They play the Lakers on Saturday, Magic on Monday, Rockets in a back-to-back on Wednesday and Friday, and then go on the road at San Antonio on Sunday, and then on the road again at the Lakers on Wednesday, and then close out the easy stretch on Friday against OKC. So that's the next 2 weeks of Kings basketball are looking pretty smooth. In my opinion, if they go anything worse than I think 5-2 is about the record that I'm willing to accept as like, okay, we it could have been better, but we definitely, you know, at that point, you're getting your head above that five games above 500 mark. You're feeling your oats a little bit because you just went on this nice little run. Like I said, five of those games being at home, you're probably feeling good off some home cooking. Probably, hopefully, get a couple blowouts in there and are able to kind of reestablish yourself as a team and kind of find yourself and what you're good at. And that's really what I'm hoping for from this seven game stretch. Frank, what are you looking forward to most in this? I don't even know what to call it because it's not, again, I don't want to be disrespectful to these teams and call it an easy stretch, but it's a lightening of the schedule, I guess.
But it should be, right? I mean, the Kings have played to a point where they are no slouches, right? But when you look at some of these other games they've had that we've looked at and said, okay, here's a good opportunity. Most notably, Charlotte, Washington, and then last night against Atlanta.
Right.
And sure, Atlanta was the second night of a back-to-back. They travel, which is a tough back-to-back. I mean, traveling from Utah, I've heard, it's a tough flight out. It's a rough flight out, a lot of turbulence. They do have some things like that are going to play in their favor. They play the Lakers on Saturday. They'll be on a back-to-back. And obviously LeBron has been playing out of his mind, even though he's almost 40 years old and partially injured.
He's got back-to-back 40-point games, if I'm not mistaken.
He's incredible. I mean, he's incredible. And it's exciting that he's going to be in the building on Saturday, but the Kings need to take advantage of the fact that the Lakers aren't a back-to-back. They have no Anthony Davis. And on down the list, I mean, Orlando is – they have length. They gave the Kings some issues in that game earlier of the season. De'Aaron Fox's shot saved them. Houston has been one of the worst teams in the league this year. San Antonio, on down the list. The Kings, to me, need to take care of business. They need to get over that five games over 500 hurdle, which they can't seem to get over. But we can't sit here coming, I mean, what, January 21st, and they play Philadelphia, and look back at this seven-game stretch and say, well, they messed that up. They squandered that opportunity. Because, look, coming up in February, I mean, I know that Minnesota is not the Minnesota Timberwolves that we've come to know, but I think Karl Anthony Towns is coming back soon, and the Kings historically have struggled in Minnesota. They have a back-to-back in Minnesota, Toronto, Memphis. The Kings need to take care of these games against the teams that are literally out of the playoff picture in San Antonio and Houston. And it's got to start this weekend. It's got to start this weekend. But staying healthy is most important. And the Kings, as we know, are dealing with a couple things. Just one big thing, Domantas Sabonis' hand. But he seemed fine. So if he can stay healthy and on the floor, the Kings should, in my opinion, should have no problem. I think you said 5-2. 5-2, to me,
that's the worst I'm willing to accept.
That's a very good, I think, benchmark, though. That's a very good, like, realistic goal. Because I could see one of these games against Houston getting away from them. The beauty of this stretch, though, is they have no back-to-backs coming up. They have days off in between all of these games. I don't know how well they've played with rest this year. I could probably pull up the splits and see that looks like. The Kings this year, on a day of rest, one day of rest, they're 14-7. They are 3-3, 500 on the second day of a back-to-back. And now three days or more rest, they're 0-3. So I don't know if they have any of those coming up, but they
don't get too much rest, please.
Clearly, Mike Brown's putting these guys through too much practice. We've heard he likes to practice a lot. But no, I'm looking forward to the stretch. A lot of home games too, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's going to be really important for them to get these wins too, because they only find themselves, even at the moment, three games out of the play. I mean, Minnesota being the 11th seed, the Kings are only three games ahead of them right now. So if you don't get that clearance against these teams that you're supposed to beat, when you're over with this and you have to play, I mean, after that Thunder game, you do have a back-to-back, and it's against the Philadelphia 76ers, and then you play the Grizzlies, and then you play the Raptors, and then you end the month with a back-to-back, but two consecutive games against the Timberwolves, who you mentioned might be getting Karl Anthony Towns back, but that's historically been a tough matchup. Like, things do not get easy for the King. It's not just like an easy road to the end of the season after that. Like, there's a real potential, if the Kings don't take care of business in this stretch, that they kind of find themselves back in the, not necessarily the play-in race in the sense of where we've traditionally seen them, where they're, you know, trying to get into the play-in, but they might be just kind of constantly fighting the rest of the year in, you know, that 7-10 range where you're never really clearing out of it, and you're just kind of in a seeding battle at that point. And now the Kings are kind of sitting pretty at the fifth seed.
Well, but that's how close it is, though. The Kings are a bad stretch away from not falling out of the top five in the West, falling out of the complete playoff picture and playing picture. Right. They're three games back from the 11th seed. Yep. So I know the Kings are the third easiest remaining strength of schedule, and I'm not going to sit here and be doom and gloom and say, oh, they're 20-17 and we should think of the worst case scenario. But that just shows a large part of them having the third easiest remaining strength of schedule is this upcoming stretch. This is it. This is going to take a huge chunk out of that. If they come through this next seven game period, the remaining strength of schedule probably is going to be what, like maybe 10, 11. I mean, this is a huge portion of games that they need to take advantage of. So I'm not taking them lightly. I'm not taking the Rockets lightly. I'm not taking anybody lightly for this team. They need to come out and put the hammer down.
Yeah, definitely. And like Mike Brown talked about it last night, and it really got me thinking. Mike Brown talked about how you can't go into any of these games expecting to win or expecting to lose because of the other team's record or what kind of streak they're on. Last night, the Hawks were coming in, I believe, on a four-game losing streak. They were coming in on a losing streak, as were the Jazz when the Kings played them. And yeah, you can look at it from you know, 1,000 feet away and say, oh yeah, the Kings did take care of business against X team, Y team, Z team. But that doesn't really do it justice. Like, you have to show the point of Mike Brown's comments, where you have to show up every single night. Every night is its own individual game, its own individual entity. Anything can happen. And just because you're on paper supposed to beat a team doesn't mean that you can just roll the ball out there and you know, things will go your way. Like, you have to show the focus on every single night in order to get the result that you want. And that's not something that many, I shouldn't say anybody, but many guys on this roster have done before, especially at this point in the season. This is, you know, the Kings are traditionally a losing franchise. We know this. They're traditionally right now around the 13 to 11 seed right now in the Western Conference and kind of trying to claw their way in there. But they haven't been in this front runner spot where they're expected to win on a night to night basis and expected to take care of business. Every night they're usually those guys who are fighting for their lives, trying to win every single game like it's their last. And now being in a comfort position, being in a power position where, again, you're supposed to take care of business. And, you know, Mike Brown has made countless times this year. He has said, I try not to gas De'Aaron up too much after his incredible performances, because this is what I expect him to do. And I think if you just kind of extrapolate that to the entire team, like, we shouldn't, you know, on a night to night basis, these guys need to not come in having a big ego, having, you know, feeling their oats a little bit. And they really do need to take every single night personally and not, you know, have these close games like we've seen. You know, not that the close games are bad, but I just think this team needs to show a level of focus during this stretch. And we've seen they've won 7 straight games before this season. They've shown that level of focus. But clearly, since they've gone on that winning streak, they haven't been the same team and haven't looked, you know, nearly as deadly offensively as they did during that 7-game stretch. It's going to be interesting to me to see, while we're like really in the middle, in the heart of this season, can the Kings look inside themselves, as corny as it sounds? Can they pull it from within themselves to really focus these next 7 games and take care of business?
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting spot that they're in, because like you said, I mean, a year ago today, what, the Kings were probably looking up saying, well, maybe we can scratch and claw our way into things.
Yeah.
Now it's not about that. It's about just staying where you are and staying in that top 5-6. I mean, I don't, you shouldn't want to play the play-in. The play-in is, I mean, coming from somebody that watches, I mean, I've watched the Yankees and the wild card game,
right,
the single wild card game. It's not fun. I mean, for when you're watching your team playing a winner take all,
yep,
single elimination game, just to, that decides your whole season. One, yep, game, the Kings should have a goal not to make the, and I think that this is very true. I don't think they'll save us publicly, but I think that they are not looking at the plan. They're looking at the top six, and they've been, yeah, a top six team all season. So it's about staying where you are right now. And yeah, there are teams that are going to make a run. I mean, the Phoenix Suns, to me, are going to figure it out. Yeah. The Golden State Warriors have been playing better basketball as of late. They did get beat by the Pistons last night, though. That was a pretty crazy finish.
Yeah.
The Trailblazers are going to be there. They're going to be challenging the Kings. But the Kings, to me, in my opinion, and I am trying to be as unbiased as I can, the Kings have the guys to be a top six team in the West. But they do need a little more help. They need to answer, mm-hmm, some questions. The bench. I mean, the bench has been kind of all over the place the past, mm-hmm, couple of games. They still do not have a backup center. They are searching for an answer. They played Trey Lyles last night as a small ball 5 in the second half. Casey Akpala, who had some huge defensive plays against Utah, doesn't play a minute when the Kings need defensive help. That Bogdan Bogdanovic and DeAndre Hunter were tearing the Kings apart late in the game. And those are both guys that could have used, I mean, the Kings could have used Casey on both of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Brown was seeing something and decided not to, and the Kings didn't pull out. That's fine. Maybe it would have made a difference. Maybe it would have. But this upcoming stretch, like you said, the heart of a season, is the time to figure these things out. And the trade deadline will go hand in hand with that. The trade deadline's about a month away. Will the Kings look to upgrade? Will the Kings also come, I think, January 10th is the guarantee deadline. They'll have to make a decision on a couple of players, Matthew Dellavedova, mm-hmm, Casey Akpala, and I think the third one is Chima. They have to make a decision on those three. Is, mm-hmm, that three? That's right. Is it those three?
That would make sense.
Yeah, and so
be the three guys they sign.
Do you fully guarantee all those players? Do you let one go and open up a roster spot? The time for those decisions is coming up because the Kings, to me, top six is the goal. They will not be a top six team unless they make a couple of tweaks, and they need more defense. They need more upside on that forward side of things. They need a Kaziuk-Paula-esque figure that can also score the basketball because the Kings are playing 4-on-5 offensively when he's on the floor. I mean, he hit a three. I think it was again. I can't remember what game.
The Utah game, I think.
In the corner.
So random. It was so random.
You
it was great. It kept them on the floor.
Oh, that helped keep them alive. Yeah. And you, me, and Brendan were looking at each other, just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
No hesitation.
No, he didn't.
I respect it, but the time is coming up. It's pretty soon to decide what are we going to do because those are the biggest areas of need right now. As good as the bench was this season, has been all year. Bench stability, bench consistency, and defensive impact. And obviously that includes the backup center position because that's the Kings' biggest area of weakness right now. And that's going to happen pretty soon, I think. They're going to have to make some decisions.
Yep. Yeah, it'll be super interesting to see what happens. I mean, yeah, you mentioned the TD and KZ thing yesterday. That was super interesting to me. I think it might have had something to do with, Coach Brown post game mentioned that he didn't like how the offense was looking when Rashawn was in. So maybe that could be a reason as to why KZ didn't see the floor. Like you mentioned, KZ, when he's on the floor, is kind of 4-on-5 on offense, and TD we know can provide that spark plug. And I just think it didn't work out for Rashawn or for TD yesterday. And that's why you saw Mike. You're completely right. Like, as they're in the middle of the season, this is the time to figure it out with the deadline right around the corner as well. Like, in about 2 or 3 weeks here, our episodes are going to be pretty heavily focused on, okay, who is the target that the Kings are going to try and get? Because it's really clear that they are searching for that answer at backup center. It wouldn't surprise me if we see a couple games here where Trey Lyles goes in at the center. We saw it in the Denver game. Obviously, Mike Brown wasn't physically present to watch that with his own eyes in front of him. It seemed to me, I don't know if you got the same vibe, that he didn't hate the Trey Lyles minutes the other day. I think he mentioned that it's more for the offensive end of the floor than more than the defensive side of the floor, just kind of hoping that Trey can you know, his gravity can kind of change the dimensions of the floor for the Kings offensively, acknowledging that defensively, it's going to be tough when you have a 6'8", 6'9", guy at center. But that's going to be super interesting to me, just kind of how the trade season develops and how all that goes down.
Yeah, and you saw Trey Lyles played backup center against Denver with Jokic, which was surprising to me. And to me, I'm looking at a game like the Lakers, who they don't really have any center depth at the moment. They have Thomas Bryant, but he's a pretty thin center. I mean, I would not be surprised if it starts next game.
Is that Damian? Oh, I thought you were going to call for Damian Jones's music. I was going to say, is that Damian Jones's music I hear?
You know what's crazy? The Kings could actually use him this year. He's not like a defensive big, but he's lengthy, and he had an offensive punch to him. He could go get you 10 points a night, no problem. Right. And decent to me, that's what it seems like Mike Brown made a point of last night. He wasn't really making a point of the defense, which I think goes without saying, to be fair. But he said that he put Trey Lyles in for the offensive impact he would bring as a stretch five. The Kings could use Damian Jones, who showed some range from the mid-range, even three-point range. And
he did hit a surprising amount of mid-range and three-point shots last year.
Yeah, I think the Kings, that would have been nice to have him over Alex Len, obviously, but didn't happen. But it would not surprise me if what we saw during the second half, Rashawn Holmes being sat for Trey Lyles against the Lakers, happens tomorrow or Saturday night. But the TD thing was also very strange to me because I feel like he's someone that was such a huge part of their success, their bench success. And he was a spark plug, the microwave, as he likes to be called. But I don't really it worked. I mean, Mike Brown benching him, I think they won 4 of 6 with TD out of the rotation in 3 of the last 5. So, I mean, it's worked. And last night he randomly makes a cameo appearance. So I'm not sure what that means for the future of him being in the rotation. I'm not sure if he's someone that the Kings are looking to have as an add-on in a Rashawn Holmes deal, if they can try to find a deal for that, because I'm not sure what other assets the Kings have that are attractive that Monty McNair would, I don't want to say wouldn't mind parting with, but Terrence Davis at this point, I mean, he hasn't been, I don't want to say he's expendable, but he kind of is expendable. I mean, when you look at who the Kings can move, he's not someone that's been integral to the team's success this year. I mean,
yeah, I think him and Malik are kind of not, they don't necessarily do the same things, but spiritually, I think they're a little redundant. You know, I think when TD and Malik are kind of both coming in to give you a huge spark off the bench. And I don't necessarily know if playing TD and Malik is what's best for the winning situation, especially when you consider the defensive end. Like, if I had to guess, I think Mike probably views TD as like the bizarro version of KZ. It's like KZ gives me all defense, minimal offense, and TD kind of gives him all offense and minimal defense. As we heard, you know, when TD took that charge and, you know, Mike was talking to him and clapping him up and doing all that praise. I remember in the post game, he was kind of like, I'm hard on TD, and like, I'm probably harder on TD than anybody else on this team. And that kind of tells me that TD might mess up quite a bit. That's kind of what that tells me.
Yeah.
And like, while it is good that he's very coachable and Mike acknowledge, they can both acknowledge that Mike rides him and is trying to make him better, the fact that Mike does ride him kind of means Mike sees a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, he's the person that, I mean, the clip of him being brought to the court and going over that, I mean, he
physically walking him to the spot, right?
Yeah. I mean, there are obviously some red flags with TD, but I mean, when you're down, and the Kings haven't had many games where they've been down by 10, 15 plus points. He's a perfect player to put in at that point, because you need someone that's going to either get you back in the game before things get out of hand or it won't work out. But I mean, he is someone that has come in and gotten them buckets when they needed him. And that Brooklyn game obviously was his highlight of the season. He was huge in that game. TD on TNT and get 30 points that night. So,
yep, 35.
Goodness. Yeah, I'm not sure what his future looks like. I think that if the Kings were to make a trade, he's a good throw-in, and for a team that's competing or a team that's still hoping to make the playoffs too, I mean, everybody is still kind of alive right now. I'm looking at the NBA standings. I mean, outside of Houston, I think San Antonio, you could say they're pretty much out. I mean, even OKC's two games out of the 10 seed. Detroit and Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte should start selling off pieces pretty soon here. Detroit too, and I'm not sure when these deals are going to take place. I think there's still a couple other dates coming up when players that sign extensions, I think, can be traded in a week or so. Deals are going to happen, but there are still some teams that are teetering on the edge. I mean, even Orlando has made a run, and they're alive. They're three games out. So, which is also speaks to the fact the Kings cannot get down for the Orlando game. They've been playing pretty well over the past month or so, 6-4 over the past 10. I'm wondering what the Kings are going to look like come February, but I don't know where TD fits. Obviously, he doesn't fit in the rotation, but if you have to upgrade and you have to subtract some pieces, he could be a name that is first off the board, because if Monty doesn't decide to, maybe he likes what Deli brings in the locker room and in practice, and obviously KZ has been someone they've thrown out in defensive situations. I don't know if they're going to let him go. So it's just going to be kind of the question of who's going to go then, who has to come off the board to upgrade the roster, because moves have to be made. You can't stand pat. You haven't earned that right to stand pat.
Yeah, I completely agree. And like, they are kind of on a condensed timeline. And I think it's not that they're trying to win the title this year, but I do think that they want to secure like a playoff positioning first. If they're in a position to lock down a playoff seed, like a playoff seed, for all the reasons that you mentioned earlier, the volatility of being in that win or go home situation. I think if the Kings are still floating around that 5 or 6 seed come trade deadline time, if I had to guess, I would say that they're probably going to make a move to make them better, just because they want to lock that thing down.
Yeah, I mean, it's contagious. I think winning is contagious, and we've seen teams that as soon as they break through, in most cases, you stay there. So that's why it's so important for the Kings
Phoenix.
Yeah. And people have said before, well, what's the big deal if the Kings make the play-in or the playoffs and they're out in the first round anyway? Why does it matter? It definitely matters from a cultural standpoint to make the playoffs and experience that and want to get back there. I think once you get a taste of the playoffs, it becomes like an addiction. That's what I've heard other people say before, the players say before, and other sports primarily. But if the Kings were to make that playoff, the playoff or playoffs, it's got to be contagious. It'd be what they're thinking about all summer long while they're working. I have to get back there. You have to get back there. And I can't stand when people say, who cares? Like they're going to make the play-in and get waxed in the first round. Maybe. But a lot of playoff teams that make it for the first time return the next year, statistically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what the stats off the top of my head, but all these teams that you see, Denver, Memphis, Dallas, the Clippers, the Blazers, these teams have all made the postseason, and they normally return. And when you lose and you fall out of that regard, it's kind of a gradual phasing out, like the Lakers. I mean, they were the NBA champions. Then they kind of, phased out. They were a play-in team, seven seed, out of the playoffs completely. We saw it happen to the Kings in 2006, or 2005. Right. They went from being a top seed. You get phased out. Right now, there are some teams that are kind of towing that line. I mean, we don't know what Utah's going to be. We don't know if Portland can put together a sustainable run. The Warriors have had injuries, so the Kings have an opportunity right now, and they need to capitalize.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I am thinking about, should we wrap this up? I am slightly concerned about internet connection as well with the storm. So.
Yeah, I think we've covered pretty much all the bases here.
We have. We went through the rundown. This was supposed to be a short episode, and we went longer than we were hoping to. So I think we're doing well so far. What I do want to talk about before we do awards, maybe we can extend the awards. This can be an extension of awards. What was the best dunk you saw this past stretch of games? I mean, I'll throw in the Lauri Markkanen dunk on Sabonis, which was something. We cannot forget about that one. We cannot show bias there. Like that was an incredible throwdown from Lauri. In that same game, we have De'Aaron throwing down on Kelly Olynyk's head. We cannot also forget the fact that Keegan Murray started that game with a throwdown on Kelly Olynyk's head as well. And then let's see here. What else? Oh, there was the Fox dunk last night where De'Aaron absolutely ends Onyeka Okongwu's life after splitting a double team and then just going chest to chest with him and throwing down. So what was your favorite dunk?
I'm going to go with the dunk.
Sorry. There was also De'Aaron's dunk in clutch time in Utah.
That's mine.
Yes,
that's mine.
Where Vanderbilt comes late on the double and De'Aaron throws it down.
They didn't rotate, and you saw Olynyk shove Vanderbilt at Fox at the last second. He's kind of like,
he's like, that is your spot.
Go get him. That one got me out of my chair. I just was like, I thought that was the game too, but the Kings just, I mean, there was some refereeing, which we didn't really talk about the officials. But I mean, look, I'm going to focus on the dunk here. I'm just going to sprinkle this in. Focusing on the officiating is getting old to me. And I just will say it's horrible. The NBA needs to take note of it. I don't really know what else to say. It's a joke. Some of those plays in the end were a joke. And then the fact that the 2-minute reports that they were a correct call. The Clarkson stopping on a dime and backing into a call. You cannot say that's a correct call. I'm sorry. But I digress. The Fox
and
dunk.
And then also the Lauri 3 where they said Keegan touches. I didn't see Keegan touch his elbow. I saw Lauri kick his feet out.
He kicked out on both, and they didn't say anything. I don't know. It's a. There's no point. We all get it, and I agree. Needs more accountability on their official part. It won't ever happen though. Well, the dunk in crunch time was my favorite. It got me out of my chair. I thought it was a game sealing dunk, and it kind of. I mean, it was a big play, but that's my last night's dunk was the most. I think disrespectful. Like dunk, like that was gross. But the most exciting to me was the Utah one. What about you?
I think I'm going to go with the one last night. The one in Utah was probably the cleanest. Obviously, without it being on technically on somebody, he was really able to take off and like that was like a LeBron James dunk. Like he cocked that thing back and really threw it down. And for it to be in the moment that it was. Definitely adds to it, and the fact that it was also a win as well. You're definitely not wrong for that one, but I'm going to edge it to the Onyeka Okongwu one just because he really like it was a traditional poster. Like he, like I mentioned, he kind of throws the ball forward to split the double team. And then on the replay in the arena, at least you see him kind of run to get the ball. And then the second he gets it, he kind of looks up and he sees Okongwu's there and he's like, I got this. And just takes off and like just explodes on him. Like we've seen De'Aaron get up before, but usually for dunks on people, it's traditionally kind of been like a momentum kind of, he's coming here, I'm coming here, and then we meet here. Not necessarily chest to chest, body to body on somebody. De'Aaron Fox he's feeling himself right now. And to me, I mean, I think I tapped both of your guys'. Just like, I didn't know what to do. So I just tapped both of your guys' head. And
get one of those.
Yeah. To me, that was definitely the most exciting dunk. But I think if you're talking the best dunk, it was probably, I think you're right, but the one in Utah for to kind of seal it.
And I think I said it already today, but I'll just reiterate. De'Aaron Fox last year dunked the ball 14 times over 60 games. And this year he's dunked 15 times over 34 games. So, and he had comments over the years before about how he didn't want to dunk as much anymore. He stopped dunking. Right. On breakaways, he would just lay it in. He dunks every time he has those opportunities now. And I think that's a confidence thing. I think he's feeling himself. He's feeling himself this year. He's on a winning team. The Kings are above 500 in January, and he's playing along an all-star center. The guys around him are good. I mean, I think he's just in a lot better headspace. And when that happens, we get exciting dunks. We get a very, very aggressive, confident De'Aaron Fox, and that is a very dangerous thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I also think that it might have something to, Giannis said the other day, like he was dunking on people and throwing down crazy dunks because House of Highlights doesn't post more unless he does those. I do wonder if that has something to do with De'Aaron's sudden boost in dunks this season. Is like, he's like, look, people just straight, I mean, as evident, though he's, you know, the all-star voting doesn't reflect it, people like dunks, and the a lot of the time, the only time you're going to get these places to post about you is if you throw it down and do a cool windmill on a fast break or something. And, you know, that's part of the game. That is part of the social media game that you're trying to play to get notoriety and get attention. And I don't know. I'm just wondering I don't care what the reason is. As long as we continue to get these kind of highlights, I'm all for it. So, shout out De'Aaron, who has just been throwing it down on everybody. And I'm kind of surprised. Like, I would not have picked him to be the leader in posters this year. Definitely would have guessed like Malik probably.
Yeah. So and Malik's had his two Kings. Yeah. This is the best dunking team the Kings have had in a while. And that includes Chemezi, who hasn't played for a while, but he had a lot of big dunks. So, and Sabonis had some pretty big posters too. Sabonis is like a sneaky poster. Just not as vertical. Too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He's very, a lot more DeMarcus Cousins posters.
Yes, just kind of a standing dunk. Yeah. Awards. I think it's your turn.
Awards. It is my turn. I'm going to go first with our King of the Week. It's got to be De'Aaron Fox. I mean, just for his fourth quarter performance in against Utah, his incredible. You know, I thought he played admirably against Ja Morant and the Grizzlies on Sunday, and then I mean, his performance against Utah at home and against Denver as well. Like, I think De'Aaron Fox has been incredible. We have our first trade of the season here.
A blockbuster.
Noah Vonleh for cash considerations
to sell to the
Shams Charania
to the Spurs,
to the Celtics. Oh, he was on the Celtics. Who knew?
I was like, not to the Kings. Noah Vonleh still in the league, by the way. I was huge on him in the draft, man.
I
liked him in the draft.
Fox. I'm going to go De'Aaron Fox, King of the Week.
Cool. I'm looking. Mine's obviously going to be the other guy on the Kings, Domantas Sabonis. past 15 games, he's a double-double in 15 straight games, by the way, which is tying a Sacramento era record. Chris Webber's or DeMarcus Cousins' Sacramento era record. Or is Chris Webber?
It's DeMarcus.
It's DeMarcus Cousins. Past 15 games, 21.1 points, 15 rebounds, 7.2 assists, 65 from the field, and 53 from three. Shout out lethal shooter, Chris's favorite shot doctor. The picture of him shooting underwater gets me every time, dude.
I just saw a video of this man. Like, he made a rim and had, like, a pyramid, essentially, on top of the rim that had nails that would, like, deflate the ball if he hit them. So, essentially, he had, like, a very small window to hit the ball. I don't know. I hate Lethal Shooter. I'm sorry.
You'll meet him at some point, and you guys will have a nice conversation, I'm sure. Sure. But Sabonis, with a broken hand and all, he is still completely that guy. I mean, just going back to when he returned from injury, he missed the one game after breaking his hand, comes back 5 games since, 24 points per game, 13 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 67% from the field.
Monster.
So, yeah. Monster. Sass says that James Hamm says that Domas might be the best Kings player he's ever covered. I think so. I mean, I think what he's doing right now, DeMarcus Cousins, to me, was...
Bro, it's not...
I don't know, but look what Sabonis is doing. Like...
Yeah, no, I mean, Sabonis is doing it for a winning team, which definitely, I mean, plays a factor. But if we're talking the best Kings player, which is an individual, I think DeMarcus, on a talent-for-talent basis, is about as talented as you get of a player. I think his headspace, his mental, was a completely opposite factor, which definitely played into his popularity, his how people view him now. I still think just from a talent perspective, I still have DeMarcus up there, but sure, in terms of production and in terms of useful winning basketball, I definitely hear what you're saying. And yeah,
eight,
you know,
eight,
sure.
19 points per game, leading the NBA in rebounds per game, 7 assists per game, pretty much. I mean, and he's doing it on 62% shooting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's top 4 in win shares. I mean, I grew up loving DeMarcus Cousins. I watched him through high school.
You and I both. Yeah, no, you're just as big of a DeMarcus fan as I am.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's how we grew up. Yeah. And I think that I'm seeing right now, and I don't think it's just like I'm being, you know, recency bias here. I think it's just, to me, it's more impressive because the main point is the Kings are winning games, and that was not the case with DeMarcus, and that wasn't all his fault. That was not all DeMarcus Cousins' fault. It just, maybe it feels better to me because the Kings are winning games, but they both are.
I think it's very fair. And I am not going to make a huge argument for the other way. It's more just an acknowledgement of, I think DeMarcus was incredibly talented and could have done something incredibly similar to this had he had the proper resources around him and mentally to kind of get things well. But, you know, yeah, I mean, they're different players for sure. I mean, Domas is definitely more of a passer, more of a facilitator, not necessarily looking for his shots all the time. We saw DeMarcus would take like 3 or 4 threes a game once he started taking threes. Domas has been pretty consistently taking 1, at max 2 threes a game. Like, he's definitely a different kind of player, and a player that I personally love passing big men. Passing big men are probably because of the era of Kings basketball that we were ushered into, but I think if you're a passing big man, that's the most valuable thing that you can really be as a big, and Domas is probably the second best, you know, behind Nikola Jokic. If Nikola Jokic doesn't exist, I think we talk about Domas in a completely different way. But yeah, you know, I definitely hear what James is saying.
I mean, this year too,
I'm just about ready to get there.
Yeah, you're close. I think if they make the playoffs, it might push you over the edge. But
sure.
And his last final thought, I mean, it was someone put on Twitter, Domas Sabonis is in the all NBA discussion, because when you think about
absolutely,
it's Jokic first team. Mm-hmm. Embiid, which, I mean, Embiid, we'll see what they do. They put 2 centers sometimes, but Embiid, second team. And the third team is going to be Sabonis or Bam Adebayo. And Bam Adebayo has been playing very well this year too, but depending on where the Kings are late in the season and where the Heat are, I think it's going to be, that's going to be the difference. Yeah. Whoever kind of ends. To me, it might not be the Kings ending with a better record, but will the Kings be in the postseason? That to me will be what sets them aside from that. But, and this continues, obviously, but I don't see any reason why this would slow down. Sabonis is literally walking into these double doubles. He is sleepwalking into these double doubles, and it's incredible to watch. I mean, he obviously works so hard on the floor and gets beat up, but he's making it look so easy. So
yeah,
he's my king of the week. Coal machine of the week. I think I'm going to nominate. I mean, we didn't talk about them that much. The officials. I'm just going to give it to the officials. I just think the last two games have been just ridiculous, man. I'm sorry. I mean, I know in the Kings have gotten some benefits. The Kings got some benefits. I mean, there were a couple of calls that went their way. I can't remember which game it was. Was it the Utah game where things went their way?
No, not really, because of the Markkanen. And are you talking the home Utah game?
Yes. I can't remember which two-minute report came out.
I think that was the Utah game, yeah.
Well, Kings are still, I think
Utah or Denver, but yes,
I think they're second in the NBA still with disadvantaged calls on the two-minute report. The Kings are. So, I'm just going to nominate their officials because the past two games have not been fun.
That's a really fun stat.
Yeah, like 19 calls, I think.
I'm going to give my Coke machine of the week. This one hurts to Malik Monk, who, you know, Malik's been fantastic all year, but has really, especially these past four games, not been himself. Past four games here, let me get his game logs. 9.5 points, 4.5, just under 4.5 rebounds, which is good to see. Or I'm sorry, 4.5 assists, which is good to see that he's still moving the ball around and not just being a scorer. But 21% from three on just under 5 attempts and 32% from the field in his past four games. It's been rough for Malik since he had that 33-point game against Denver. 9 points against Utah, 18 against Memphis, which, you know, not a lot of people played well in that Memphis game, but he was also shooting 41% in that game, 7-17. We see in that second Utah game in Utah, he only had 2 points, 1-7 from the field. And then last night against Atlanta, 3-9 from the field, 9 points, 5 assists. He just, you know, he's had a slow week, and after dropping 33 and really, you know, that was his high of the season, for him to kind of crater, you know, really crater after that, has been disappointing. And it's lucky that the Kings were able to go 2-2 during that stretch. But I think if Malik Monk has a better game last night, the Kings probably win that one pretty handily, I think, you know. And not that Malik had a bad game, but, you know, he just hasn't been himself really since that 33-point outing. And even before that, you know, he was struggling a little bit. So interesting to see how that kind of develops. But I expect Malik to bounce back for sure. And I've been on record in saying I'm pretty sure he's going to finish top two, top three in the six man of the year vote at the end of the year.
So yeah. I expect him to bounce back. He's had a good year. It's been a rough couple of games for the Kings bench as a whole, really. I mean, against Atlanta last night, 17 points on the bench, 38% shooting. In Utah, there was basically no production from the bench, 8 points on 28% shooting. Mm. So you're going to have to have more than that. And the Kings have been a top five scoring team for most of the year. They probably have fallen out of that at this point, but I'm not worried about them getting back on track, and especially not about Malik Monk. Malik Monk's going to be fine. I mean, sorry about the Coke machine.
I know. I'm sorry. It never feels good, but
that's the first one you've given to a player in a while.
This one feels obvious, though. I mean, you know, and it's easy to say because Malik has played great. It's not like you know, like Rashawn Holmes was definitely in consideration for this award. That would have been a little bit sadder of a conversation. Yeah, I'll give it to Malik.
Yeah.
Well, here we go, Frank. We said we were going to record for 30 minutes, and we are an hour and 5 into this one. I think that is all the thoughts we have. I am shocked that we still have power, still have internet as well.
Yes.
Shout out everyone who doesn't have that, so you haven't been able to watch this, obviously. But everybody stay safe out there. I know I said that this storm has been kind of weak, but, you know, I'm sure that there's people out there who have trees that fell on their car. And I think we're still in the middle of this storm. So it's supposed to rain the next 10 days or so. So,
as far as weather can go on your phone, does it show rain?
Yes. Yes. All the way until Saturday, 60% chance of rain. It's supposed to rain, maybe thunderstorms, lightning storms at 4 o'clock today, and it's supposed to clear up overnight into tomorrow. But tomorrow's supposed to be clear, but after that, we're in the thick of this thing.
So much for the drought, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, right. So much. So for everybody can now leave your water on all day. It's all good. Yep. We're out of the drought. We're fine.
It's official. We are official. We are scientists.
Stamping it. That's gonna be it for us. I guess I'll just give you guys the next couple games that the Kings have here. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but on Saturday the Kings play the Lakers. Monday they play the Orlando Magic, and then Wednesday they play the first of their two game series against the Houston Rockets. We will probably, more than likely, unless internet goes down or something, we will be back next Thursday at this same time, 10 o'clock, right here on Sacktown Sports 1140 YouTube channel, also on the Sacktown Sports 1140 Twitter page. For Frankie Cardicelli, my name is Chris Watkins. Y'all stay safe out there. Have a fantastic
day. Stay dry.
And yes, stay dry and avoid trees at all costs.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.